And last week, Andrew Wilkie revealed in Parliament that the Commonwealth Director of Public Prosecutions had charged lawyer Bernard Collery and his client, a former ACES spy known to the public as Witness K, with breaching the Intelligence Services Act. The two are accused of exposing the now infamous East Timor bugging scandal, where the Australian government bugged the cabinet of Prime Minister Alkatiri. These charges come half a decade after the homes and offices of the two men were raided by ASIO and the passport of Witness K seized. Their treatment raises questions about the protection of free speech in this country and whether the government is actively preventing media outlets from reporting on the matter. To discuss this, I'm joined by Clinton Fernandez, Professor of International and Political Studies at the University of New South Wales. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Good to be with you.
So for listeners who may not be aware of this, can you briefly outline what's actually happened?
Well, in Timor or in Parliament?
In this particular scandal.
Okay, well, in September, October 2004, there was a heightened terror threat in Southeast Asia, including to Australia. The Australian embassy in Jakarta had been bombed on the 9th of September 2004, and a dozen people were killed. The terror group known as Jamaah Islamiyah had claimed responsibility. And the Howard government at the time said that extremist Muslim terrorism is the number one priority for the government. It mentioned it 50 times in the space of a 110-page white paper on terrorism. And it said Indonesia is a focus. That mentioned 100 times in the 110 pages. But instead, the government apparently diverted ACES resources away from that war on terror to go and spy on the Timorese, who are 90% Catholic. There's no extremist Muslim terrorist groups there. And just happened to be, at a time when we were conducting, maritime border negotiations to fix who gets the oil and gas rights in the Timor Sea. Mm-hmm. And so there was bewilderment inside the Australian Secret Intelligence Service about the diversion of priorities. But then the bewilderment turned to anger some years later when it was realized that the Secretary of the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade had resigned and joined the board of directors of Woodside Petroleum. And Alexander Downer, the foreign minister, when he left Parliament, took a lucrative consultancy with Woodside. And so that apparently is what led to a complaint within ACES. It wasn't a general whistleblowing complaint. It was a complaint within mm-hmm. ACES. This is as much as can be pieced together from the public record. I don't have any inside information inside ACES,
yeah.
Of course. The officer who made that complaint was the director of all technical operations for all of ACES, a very, very senior person. They constructively dismissed him. He then sought legal advice from a lawyer that ACES had designated as the person he could go to. That's Bernard Collery. Collery determined that, in fact, that operation had been conducted in violation of the Intelligence Services Act. You're not supposed to be using ACES for the purposes of a particular corporation. You're supposed to use it for national security and arguably national economic well-being in Section 7 of the Intelligence Services Act. He also determined that it breached the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties, international law. And so he made arrangements to try and resolve the matter privately. But in fact, the government went public saying the Timorese are accusing us of spying. And they are the ones that first raised the allegations in public. Witness K and Bernard Collery did not. Okay, so they raided the house of Witness K. ASIO raided the house of Witness K and Bernard Collery. And 4.5 years later, after the government concluded a new treaty with Timor, the Director of Public Prosecutions filed charges against both men.
So these charges, according to some people, David Dixon in the Sydney Morning Herald, labeled them as an act of political revenge. How plausible is this?
Oh, very plausible. What Professor Dixon said, I think is entirely accurate. At least the judgment is entirely accurate. The details, who knows? Because it's a secret matter, of course, and the case will be heard in secret. Mm-hmm. But I found Professor Dixon's comments entirely plausible, and in fact, his op-ed should be required reading for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And the Director of Public Prosecutions, are they justified in charging these two men?
They have the right to do that. Okay, the Commonwealth Director of Public Prosecutions has the right to and the responsibility, in fact, to charge. But the prosecution policy of the Commonwealth says very specifically that it has to be done in a matter of openness and accountability, meaning that those who lay these charges should have to be prepared to explain publicly why it's in the public interest to do so. Why are they doing it? And there's something odd about those charges.
Whereas there's nothing forthcoming in this case in terms of the reasoning behind it.
Well, yes, but you know the thing is, so the Director of Public Prosecution, Sarah McNaughton, SC, is a former counsel to the Abbott-appointed Trade Union Royal Commission. No charges were filed for 4.5 years. Then a month or two after Australia and East Timor concluded the treaty, charges were filed. It's as if they were waiting. This is what Andrew Wilkie said in Parliament. They were waiting for the diplomacy to get out of the way before deciding to bury the bodies in his memorable turn of phrase. But that's the timing. Secondly, they accused him of, revealing details of the operation, like the timing and so on, to a number of journalists, like people in the ABC.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, the first person that he spoke to, and he didn't give any names of any ACES officers, he didn't put any lives at risk, he mentioned that this, in fact, had happened, the general fact had happened. He spoke to Leo Shanahan, a journalist for The Australian. But the prosecutor's charge sheet only accuses Kaleri of talking to journalists in the ABC, not to Leo Shanahan in The Australian. So it's as if, as Senator Nicola Kim said in Parliament, the prosecutor and whoever's doing this is basically trying to keep on side at least one media outlet which can defend it.
So the Espionage and Foreign Interference Bill was passed last Thursday, which punishes anyone, even journalists, who leak or receive classified information. How concerning is it in terms of federal government cracking down on blocking journalists from reporting on actions that they
You wouldn't be able to get away with this in the United States, that's for sure. Okay. Secondary disclosure provisions are a very difficult, very different matter. So, for example, let's say you happen to be an intelligence officer and you leak. Let's play role reversal for a second. You leak stuff to me, and I'm the journalist.
Mm-hmm.
The government has the right to prosecute you because it's the government's secrets. But they shouldn't have the right to prosecute me because I'm doing my job as a journalist.
Right.
Now, what these things do is they have a secondary disclosure provision, meaning it can criminalize my conduct.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Right. So it's criticizing, it's leveling the ability to prosecute people who shouldn't be able to be prosecuted for making the information public.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if there's an option, if you as a journalist defame somebody, then that's a different matter. But if you publish something that the government should be keeping secret, then maybe they can go after the people who are leaking it, but certainly not the journalists. But mm-hmm. in fact, but the secondary disclosure provision is the most worrying aspect. Yeah.
And Australia, I mean, because unlike America, Australia does not have any sort of official sanctioning of freedom of speech. Do you think an explicit protection for free speech or free media in Australia is something that should be considered, or is it something that, is kind of...
It should be considered, but it's sort of all over the horizon. I mean, we have an implied protection of speech on federal political matters, right? I mean, there is the 1992 Nationwide News case, which says that, there's an implied protection to discuss political matters at the federal level. I mean, and that's it. There are ways to do it. What should be happening is a campaign. I mean, I'm not organizing, but I haven't got the temperament for it.
Mm-hmm.
But conversations like this, like what you've just organized with me, elsewhere, should accompany the process by which Kaleri and Kay go to trial. The court is a very austere and threatening place with a very kind of a limiting decorum to it. The court will not allow the defendants to argue that the government is prosecuting them for revealing the government's own crimes, although that in fact is what is happening. The court will not allow the morality of the bugging operation or the diversion of intelligence priorities to enter the courtroom. I mean, any attempt to win acquittal will have to be fought along
narrow legal guidelines
what you and I might find trivial, legal triviality.
Of course, yeah.
But that shouldn't stop other people, including people in the journalism community, from providing the public with other forums. I mean, what's remarkable is the fact that the Law Society of Australia, or New South Wales, so any law society, the Bar Council, have not actually had a peep. There's nothing. Where is the Bar Council saying, let's have a forum to discuss the Kaleri and Kay case? The secret evidence. I mean, the government wants to have the entire trial heard in secret.
So, Clinton, I suppose I would like to ask, what should we be looking for in this case as members of the public? What should we be paying attention to?
The letters to the editors that have come through are definitely getting noticed. I mean, they're getting noticed in the legal community, important magazine called Justinian. It was noted that, in fact, the Bar Council is silent, but the public seems to be writing into the editor. What we should be looking for? Look, I'm not a campaigner, okay? So I don't have an insight into either Coleri's tent. I don't even know who Witness K is, okay? And I certainly am not working with the prosecutor. But I would just think, you know, as a citizen, one could keep in touch with any things that are being organized on social media to be aware of, or to protest the case, or public awareness forums. If there are any such things that are going on social media, which is the way people seem to be organizing now, I would keep in touch with that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for
talking
about
it. Absolutely.
Okay, bye.